Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope, and I'm your host, Rory Hearn, and I'm joined today by Julian Marseille from the independent science advocacy group who has been advocating a zero COVID strategy. Julian Marseille, I'm delighted to have you on Reboot Republic.
Thanks for having me, Rory.
Julian, now, there's a lot of debate ongoing at the moment in regard to government and its strategy around COVID. And in particular, there seems to be a real pushback against the idea that you and others have been advocating and that we're very much supporting on this podcast as well, around the idea of a zero COVID strategy. And we had the Minister for Health in the Shannon claiming that it would mean us in lockdown, restricting us to 2 kilometres until September. Maybe you could outline briefly, you know, what would we actually need to do to implement a zero COVID strategy, and what would it mean?
Yeah, to implement a zero COVID strategy, we'd need to do a few things that the government is not doing at the moment. The first thing is that the lockdown right now is annoying for a lot of people, but if you look at traffic data, it's not as locked down as the first lockdown in last March. So there's things like, there's people who go to the office still way too much. There's some sectors that are deemed essential that are not really essential. So you could tighten it in that way. Yeah. And
We'll stop there. You're doing some tapping noise.
Really?
Yeah.
It might be my wife. Do you want me to start again?
Yeah, because it like literally, it's like you're banging on a key, computer key.
I don't know what it was. Tell me again.
Yeah, if it happens again, it might be the earphone sometimes rubbing against the clothes or something.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, okay. That's it.
Yeah, that's it when you're moving that.
I'll hold it like this. Okay.
Okay.
So do you want me to just give the answer again?
Just give the answer again, yeah.
Okay, so in order to have zero COVID, what we would need to do first is to tighten the current lockdown. I know it might sound, we're already sacrificing a lot. Why should we do more? But if you look at traffic data, there's much more traffic than there was during the first lockdown last March. So there's people who still go to the office, for example. So it's a matter of talking to employers or convincing them or forcing them not to have so many people working in person. So there's those types of things, a few essential things that are not essential should be tightened up. But the other aspect is really international travel. There's absolutely no point going through a lockdown to reduce our cases and then not keeping it out and letting the country be reseeded by the Brazilian variant, the British variant, the South African variant. This is the most ridiculous thing that we're doing. All that work, and we're letting people coming in and with virtually no checks. Because a thing that people by now might know, I think, during the summer, we were at zero COVID. And then we did nothing else other than a lockdown. And then gradually, travelers came back in. That's really well demonstrated, by the way, by a new paper in genetics analysis that showed that the new strains we've had in August, September, let's say, they were not there previously. So they're completely different. That was done very well. So it confirmed what we thought. So travel quarantine, you need to have mandatory 14-day hotel quarantine. End of discussion. There's no other way that makes any sense for Ireland. Countries that were able to eliminate the virus more or less from their country all did that. And the hotels don't have any business now, so they'll be willing to do that. So that needs to be done well.
Just on that, because I think it is pretty fundamental, and kind of as that paper found in terms of the summer, like it's really hard when we think back of everything that we have done since then, and we have gone through the thousands of people who have died, the tens of thousands of people who've been affected, that we reached the point of zero COVID last summer, but because of international travel and variants coming back in different variants. So now as we're at this point again, where thankfully we're seeing the numbers reducing, and as you know, the figures are coming out, some counties, for example, are at close to or at zero. That in the next, you know, hopefully month, maybe 2 months, we might reach a point of extremely low numbers. That in that case, the only way the virus comes back in, starts increasing again, is from international travel.
Exactly. That's, sorry, I'll just wait for the noise. Yeah, exactly. So if you push it to zero, near zero, there's only one other way to bring you back up to the high number of cases that we've had, is travel. That's it. The virus doesn't emerge out of nothing in Ireland. So it's really the one key aspect. If you look at New Zealand or Australia, that's their only source of infection. So when there's cases popping up there, it's all from travel, really. So, yeah.
And at the moment, what the government have done is introduced mandatory quarantine for a number of countries.
Yeah, they have a list of, I think they're at 30 or so countries right now. But that's very useless because, you know, you have certain countries, a lot of them are African countries, and it doesn't matter where you're from. People could have traveled and transited in other countries, could have been on a plane sitting next to other people. So you need to do it all, or there's no point doing it, right? So if you could just regulate Dublin Airport and the ports, it'd be a big, big improvement. If anything, for the variants, that would be prevented from being more aggressive, you know, because now this week we've actually shaved most old variants cases. So the new cases we have every day on the news now, it's really the British variant. So if, in other words, if we didn't have that variant right now, we'd be pretty much near zero, because it's a more difficult variant to eliminate. That's why the travel is so important. And there's a little difficulty in Ireland, which is the border. So ideally, you'd have Belfast regulated as well. But there's no international flights landing in Belfast right now. There's only UK flights. So if you could deal with that in some way, whether through testing or whatever, or quarantine, then you'd have a really a hermetically sealed island, really. Not that nobody would get in, but you'd have quarantine or essential travel would be allowed in, but the rest would be kept out. So that's another big thing. And the government is really, you can see it's not serious. I mean, there's no way right now you can argue that whatever they're doing is serious. And that's really the most frustrating part.
And why do you think that is? Because it seems that, you know, again, you know, I don't think it's fair to say the government isn't serious. They're serious, but they're not serious. They're not implementing a strategy that is really about suppression. It's not that they're not serious. It's that they don't agree with this strategy. And the question is why? Why will they not do a quarantine for every person coming into the country?
Yeah, I think there's two broad reasons. One is economic reasons type. So you have, let's say there's direct lobbies like the airline lobby, stuff like that. But more broadly, it's that a lot of companies operating here who have done well, think about the big multinationals or other big companies, have done well economically during the last year. They have supply issues, so maybe they want to build new infrastructure or bring in whatever, workers or anything like that. And the government is not willing to disrupt that. Same thing for disrupting the construction industry, right? So they want to keep their workers coming in from Northern Ireland or something. Meat plants, they want to keep working as they're doing with no sick pay or something like that. So the government, to carry out a zero COVID strategy, would have to challenge the business sector, not fully, but in some important respects, and they're not willing to do that. That's the first part.
If for example, like, you know, for, let's say, the meat factories or those companies you're talking about, if the issue is workers coming in and the need for workers to come in, at a 14-day quarantine just means you have to kind of bring that extra delay into your planning. It doesn't mean you still can't do these things. Is the issue therefore that it's like the government doesn't want to give the impression that it's anti these companies, or it doesn't want to upset them, rather than actually interfering with their
Yeah, I think that that's it. There's a bit of both. There's real interference. There's setting a precedent that businesses will be put in their place in a way. But like you said, if it's 14 days, it's not the end of the business. It's actually just a cost that you price in, and the government could even subsidize that to some extent, and it would be all right. So that leads me to my second reason, is that it's not really an economic thing. It's more about the willingness of the government to carry out a big national project that has to be well executed. You know, if you go for a zero COVID strategy, it's constant monitoring. You can see in Australia and Taiwan and all those countries, this is a really tight organizational challenge. And I don't think they're in the business of doing that really, you know, a kind of really popular project that's very requires a lot of competence, requires a lot of investment in public health, for example, because you couldn't carry out this elimination without more public health staff and training. So that would mean boosting the public health side of the healthcare system and training more people, having more people on the state payroll or whatever. So that's the other reason, not being the first one in Europe that tries that and maybe, you know, maybe doesn't work out. So you'll be criticized or something. I mean, I always say that if Germany and France tomorrow morning were saying, okay, we're going to go for a zero COVID strategy in Europe, and that's what it's going to be, I think the Irish government would turn around within about 2 hours and say, yeah, yeah, of course we were getting ready for that anyway, and we were happy to do this, you know? I think there's a bit of a symbolic effect as well, not to be seen as good players. Like you saw during the austerity years, you know, they would not have said, look, it makes sense economically not to have austerity. Can we just do it? No, you just, you don't break ranks with your buddies, elite buddies from Europe. And I think there's a that component as well. So the direct economic costs or relationship with the business sector. And the other one is more the capacity to be daring and going against the grain of established European establishment and carrying out a project very well done and investing in your public health workforce. I think all that stuff means that they're quite reluctant. And also we have to remember that the economy side, in Ireland, a lot of the economic sectors have not had a bad year last year. You know, it's really a K-shaped recovery. The hospitality sector has taken a massive hit. Other sectors, very important sectors, have not necessarily had a bad year. So rocking the boat is might not be on their first thing on their mind, you know. So the thing I don't understand, though, is why the hospitality and industry has not been more vocal for zero COVID, because they're getting shafted every day, right? The pubs have been closed for a year or something. What do you have to lose? You'll be closed for another year. You know that. So why not be more vocal? And in private, when they talk to us, they're much more in favor of zero COVID than you would think by watching prime time and having those angry pub owners who want to reopen everything, because they know very well that, like I said, they don't have anything to lose, really, you know, like they're closed, they're going to keep, they're going to be the last ones to open. So they kind of see that it'd be good to have a zero COVID domestic economy, more tourism within Ireland. I don't know. They're probably not willing to break ranks or something with the government.
And is it as well, do you think, because the government's, and obviously a lot of the public narrative and discussion is going around this, the idea that the vaccine is going to solve the situation.
And yeah, there was a lot of that. And the reason why the opposition parties came along to our viewpoint of elimination in January, they kind of, Labour and Sock Dems kind of turned around, is in large part because they realized that the vaccine wouldn't solve everything. So there's still that idea lingering in the political class and maybe the business class as well. The problem with the vaccines is that, of course, they were they are really helpful. So you have to vaccinate as much as you can. But to get a good herd immunity, it'd be at least 80% of the population vaccinated. And, you know, the vaccines are not perfectly effective. I mean, they're pretty good. But so you always have a certain percentage of the population that even if vaccinated, it won't work well. You also have the fact that in order to reach that, it'll take a long time, really. So if you could always say just vaccination, but by the time you reach that, it would mean lockdowns after lockdowns to get to, I don't know, is it going to take a year or something to reach that level of herd immunity? So the vaccine, together with quarantine for travelers and public health tracing and contact tracing, that will really get us to where we want faster. So that's the kind of strategy. And with the vaccines, of course, what everybody knows by now, that if you vaccinate, that's fine. But if you leave a massive pool of infection in the whole world, you will have inevitably new variants that will render the vaccines not so effective. And then you can develop a new vaccine, but it'll just be starting from scratch in a way. So it'll take even more time.
Yeah, and I think that's a big issue in terms of the public kind of perceptions of zero COVID, is that this idea has been, you know, planted that, oh, once you get the vaccines, basically once the vulnerable are vaccinated, that then pretty much we can go, you know, we can open up and we can deal with this kind of circulation of COVID because it's going to, you know, the vulnerable are vaccinated.
Yeah, that's the good point. That's the main counter argument in the popular mindset, if there is one, to identify against zero COVID. The problem with that is that, let's say you vaccinate everybody who's 65 and above or 55 and above or whatever age cutoff you want to use, there is still, what, about 3 million people or so that are not vaccinated in, under that scheme, or 4 million, or depending on where you have the cutoff. So you assume that those people are not vaccinated, and so they'll get infected at some point. So then the question becomes, if you have 3 million people who get infected, what does that do? Well, the death rate is going to be much lower than for people who are older, right? Because they're younger people. That's fine. But over a population of 3 million or 4 million, that's a lot of hospitalization and a lot of deaths and a lot of long COVID type of thing. So it's very, even if you remove the deaths and the long COVID, just about the hospitalization, if you have the hospitals that are jam-packed with people who have COVID and they need the hospital care, not even ICU, but you could have ICU as well, then what do you do for your healthcare system? I mean, everybody else that needs to go to the hospital can't really go, or they can go, but they'll get it. So they'll postpone, they'll suspend certain care, and that leads to other problems. And
we've seen that already in terms of the giant, exactly, you know, the growing waiting lists and impact on, you know, the wider.
We'll magnify that by so much that it's not even fun thinking about it. And a lot of people too would be okay with some hospitalization, and then they won't be able to get it because the hospital is jam-packed because of so many other people. Then their condition might deteriorate, a COVID condition that would be sorted out with some hospitalization, a bit of oxygen or whatever, and then they can't get it, so they get worse. So it leads to a lot of problems. So you can always imagine scenarios whereby, let's say you vaccinate, like I said, everybody above 45, you know, years old, and then everybody who has the top five underlying conditions and the young people. So you've vaccinated basically everybody who's vulnerable. Then you could see, okay, at one point, if everybody else gets infected, or maybe half of the people get infected, what is it going to give us in terms of outcome? And it's very, very hard to predict that. And I wouldn't risk it, you know, and people in ISAC would think it's even dangerous just to consider that. Neffet is really against that because of what I said. You know, you have a lot of healthy people, but if you have 3 million or 4 million of them unvaccinated, then it will lead
But that's essentially the government strategy.
Well, it is. I mean, if you had to ask me what their strategy is beyond whatever they write in their documents, yeah, it's about vaccinating whenever is possible. And then until then, you have lockdowns when it's politically unacceptable to keep going at, you know, that many cases per day, and then you bring them back down and then you let them go back up because there's a new either Christmas, either Easter or the summer or whatever, and you want to open up to look good politically. So it's a yo-yo lockdown strategy, and it's very, very costly in terms of health, but also in terms of the economy. I mean, some restaurants, when they opened at Christmas, they actually lost money because they bought so much stuff and, you know, reserves and stock, and then they couldn't even use them up because they were just open for a short period. So it's very damaging for a business. You can't run a business like that, especially not in the hospitality.
Yeah. So no, that's I think even in terms of the, you know, the mental health impact, you know, on people and the isolation, you know, and this idea that, you know, people are so, and the vulnerable, particularly in terms of, and that's another thing, you know, I wondering around, have you looked at, and we've talked about it here, is inequality, and that, you know, we're seeing, you know, disadvantaged areas now with much higher rates, particularly in Dublin, you know, issues of housing, issues of course, they're working in retail. What do you think needs to be looked at around that, and how is inequality impacting on it, do you think?
Well, the inequality is very obvious. I mean, I don't know if you remember, I think it was in the autumn, somebody created a map of or a graph lining up all the Dublin electoral areas by income, and then by COVID, and it was perfectly, you know, a mirror image, really. So for the reasons you say, you know, maybe people have service sector jobs that are not like professional jobs online, crowded conditions in the job and the housing conditions. So all that becomes, you know, magnifying the effect in communities that are disadvantaged. So maybe another reason we were asked talking about why the government is not doing too much is because the people the government cares about are not affected as much as the majority of the population. And related to that, I mean, there's a geographical dimension that's very important in terms of what we said, inequality in certain areas, but also the way to deal with COVID is really to have this, what we call this green zone strategy. So right now for a politician, it's very easy to say, my God, zero COVID, this is just crazy. It's never going to work. Look at the number of cases we have. We've been in lockdown for 4 months or 3 months or whatever. But it's very easy to dismiss when you're talking about the whole country. But when you have a big problem, you break it up into small problems. So the scandal for me is not that Ireland is not at zero COVID. It's that Kerry is not at zero COVID. That is just a scandal, because there's no reason that Kerry or Cork or the rural areas shouldn't be at zero. They're not global regions connected by a lot of travel. They're not, you know, high density of population places. So we try to advocate that approach, and it's not just an Irish thing. It's Australia did the same thing. Germany has a movement for, they call it no COVID, but they really foreground the green zone strategy. So if you have, let's say, Kerry and Cork that are at zero, protect them, put checkpoints, regulate movement, and you can open up, maybe not, but you won't open everything as normal. But if you can open even the schools, only that as normal, that would be such an amazing achievement. You know, okay, we can close all the pubs and all that, but maybe some shops that are important, you open them in the schools as well. And as long as you control traffic, then at least it becomes a lever. So the way we see it is that if you have an example, Kerry or Cork or Galway, zero COVID, the government, it becomes impossible for them to ignore that. And they cannot say, we don't care, we won't do anything to protect that, because people will get really pissed off. So if the people of those regions take pride in their zero COVID status, which is inevitably what's going to happen, they'll say, listen, we reached that point, don't let it you know, fall back into high infection. So the business community, people, the schools will get together and say, look, we have to protect this, establish checkpoints or whatever. And the government will see that. And then even the North will see that. And it becomes embarrassing for them to do nothing when you actually have some zones that are zero COVID. So in Ireland, in this year, I'm told that zero COVID for a long time now. But apparently they can't open up because it's not national policy or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you open up and it's an island. Yeah. Okay. It's easy. But at least you can practice about how to do that. Isle of Man in the UK, we saw some images 2 or 3 weeks ago about the pubs open. that really gives a good example, because people always say, oh, New Zealand, Australia, they're really far from Europe. They don't have the same situation. But there are examples here. Ireland this summer was at zero, but also regions of Ireland that could be reaching zero much faster. So that's kind of the simple strategy.
And just in terms of finishing up, Julian, in terms of convincing the public and to get, you know, a change, or how do you see the public attitude towards zero COVID? Because we've seen lots of, go on.
Yeah, the zero COVID attitude for the public is very present. And when we had the polls a month ago or so, about 91% of people who want hotel quarantine for travel, 72% who want to seal the border with Northern Ireland, we were all surprised and nice. Like, we thought it would be a good support, but not like 90%. So we were very, very surprised. And it shows that people agree with our main policies, because they're just very common sense. You know, like, you manage travel because you don't want new variants in. It's very easy to understand that. I think maybe there's a case of some people not seeing the whole picture, in the sense that they'll agree with quarantine, they'll agree with public health, that's better resource, but they won't. Then they'll say, oh, zero COVID, it's a bit too much. But then you can say, well, yeah, you just agreed to every policy of zero COVID. It's just that because the government always dismisses it, maybe it looks like a crazy idea.
Yeah.
But very favorable. I mean, I just don't see why you would oppose zero COVID, really, on principle, at least, you know. Why, if you have a virus, would you not try to deal with it as other countries have done? We're lucky in this. We have a lot of examples that have been successful. So it's not some kind of socialist dream or something that you try to convince people on paper. You can just really see that some countries have done it very well. Their economies are doing much better, health as well.
I think it is very clear that, you know, it is doable, as you say. And in terms of the question is how to get the public, I think, to put the pressure on government, because we have, you know, government has to change. Otherwise, we are going to be in this yo-yo lockdown situation. Like, how do you think, what can people do? What can listeners to Reboot Republic and the wider public do in terms of trying to shift to this and shift government to take on this strategy?
Yeah, well, we have the We Can Be Zero campaign, which is more of a national popular campaign. There's a website for that. It's a bit more difficult maybe to, in times of COVID, where everything is online, so you can't see the people come to a meeting and protest or something. But the We Can Be Zero campaign is good because it allows us to, first of all, have a group of people, and we have, I don't know the numbers, but it's kind of quite good at the moment. And we're having plans to crowdfund as well, to run radio ads and to run Facebook ads. And there's a lot of movements that have groups that have emerged recently, something like Cork Can Be Zero or Galway Can Be Zero. And you can gather like people in the community, whether it's GPs or businesses, hospitality industry, and have an organization. You cannot solve COVID without good local involvement and leadership. It's just impossible, because it happens in certain places that are different from each other. That's one thing that people could do, and start a whatever County Can Be Zero movement, and then look at the website for ideas. There's a few suggestions there, whether it's donations or starting something new. I'm a bit vague here because we're in a process of rolling out those kind of ideas. We have,
well, like, people can go over to the We Can Be Zero they're on Twitter, and I assume they're on Facebook as well, and check it out, and, you know, get in touch if they're up for helping out. I think there. Well, listen, Julian Marcille, thanks so much for joining me today on Reboot Republic. That was really interesting, and I think, you know, it's stark for me in terms of, you know, what you set out, you know, is that idea of yo-yo lockdowns. I think that people, I think, are under the misinformation that somehow this vaccine will mean we'll be out of that situation, that, you know, that actually we need to pursue a strategy that is actually going to keep us at zero. So thank you so much for joining me today and setting that out.
Thank you, Rory. I'll come back if you invite me again.
Well, of course, absolutely. And reminder to our listeners, please, we're an independent media. We rely on you to support, to fund the podcast, their production. You can become a patron. Go over to Tortoise Shack. Patreon.com/TortoiseShack. Become a patron. Become a patron. Become a supporter. We know that you really enjoy and find these podcasts engaging. And I would put a real personal appeal out there. We're producing a lot of podcasts at the moment. They cost money to produce. Please support us if you can. Whatever you can each month, go over to patreon.com and become a supporter. And we will look forward to talking to you soon. Thank you very much.